Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now celebrating 17 years of broadcasting success, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience and those tuning in online worldwide. We appreciate you all being with us as well. Our next guest has written a book that makes an interesting connection that a lot of us may not even think about. That is about public education and the impact it's having on our American democracy. When we talk about democracy today, a lot of times we think about decision-making that's being made. Definitely public education is impacted by that. The book is called Schoolhouse Burning, Public Education and the Assault on American Democracy. Our guest for this segment is author Derek W. Black. I want to talk to Derek not only about the writing of the book, but also what it's been like for him to be able to tackle this topic, to be able to take us into what is happening with public education and why it's something that all of us should be aware of, because it does have an impact on us as well as, of course, those who are molding the future. If you guys have not heard about the book before, of course, we'll let you know how to be able to get your own copy of it, so definitely stay tuned for that. Derek, thank you so much for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. You know, I remember you had me on a few years ago, and that was great, and it's really exciting to be back again.
Well, look, the pleasure is definitely all mine. I mean, another great book here, Derek. I think that the thing, though, about this book, and I didn't think about it until I got into it, and that was a lot of times when people think about education, we kind of think about it almost in a bubble. Maybe a little bit differently now with 2020 being the way it is, and I think a lot of people who have kids in school understand, you know, it's a lot more difficult and complicated than they may think. But what has it been like for you to make this connection, Derek, between education and also the way that it impacts the rest of our lives?
Yeah, well, nice turn of the phrase there, in a bubble. Yeah, I mean, I think it is true that we often think of public education in a bubble. It's that thing that our kids do. We drop them off in the morning and pick them up in the afternoon and hope all goes well and support them in the evenings. We really think of it quite often as this sort of personal experience for our families and our children, and it certainly is that. But the story of the book is really talking about the early foundational commitments that this nation has made to public education. And those weren't about just personal experiences. Those were about building a democracy in which everyone could participate. And so our public schools, although not perfect today, never perfect in the past, they have continually expanded access. And each time we have tried to expand our democracy, we've done that through our public schools. And then, of course, today, and I'm sure we'll get into it, you know, we see folks that are wanting to move us in a different direction, move us away from public education. And my point is that if we abandon our public education, we are really abandoning our democracy itself and what has helped us get to this point in history.
Yeah. And I think that is one of the big things. You actually say point blank in the book, Derek, in the very beginning, the story of public education goes hand in hand with democracy and voting. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you rewind back into the late 1700s, you know, the nation and the world, I should say, the world was ruled by kings and queens and a handful of elites. And they weren't just giving that power up, and then, you know, anywhere else in the country, they were holding on to it. But America was this radical experiment in democracy. And our founding fathers, who were elite themselves, said, look, if we're going to hand this thing over to regular people, they got to have public education, right? As Madison said, the father of our Constitution, right? A popular government without the means of acquiring popular information is but a farce and a tragedy. And so they knew this thing would self or could self implode if regular people didn't have the ability to learn about and find the common good and come together around common values.
So tell us about the research for a book like this, Derek, because, again, for those who are looking for the correlation and you're able to take us back into that, I mean, how much research did you have to do? What is the time period you kind of took when it came to getting this book prepared?
Well, in a lot of respects, this book is the culmination of a career. So I had parts of it sort of in my knapsack of knowledge. You know, I'd done a lot of work on Reconstruction and, in particular, the Confederacy's re-entering into the Union, and the conditions of doing that in public education was one of the requirements for the Confederate states to re-enter the Union, that they had to provide a constitutional guarantee of education. So that part I kind of had with me, and of course I am a former civil rights attorney and still do work on civil rights matters now. So I had the Brown versus Board of Education sort of story in my knapsack as well. The parts that were new and the most challenging to me were really the foundation, sort of the early period of the nation itself. I really hadn't looked that deeply at Adams and Jefferson's papers and a lot of those sort of early thinkers. And I hadn't looked at the major steps of the nation took to support public education. I mean, I knew some highlights. I didn't know them with any depth. So that stuff was really new to me and eye-opening when I started making connections from the beginning of the nation until now. But the real heart of the book, not necessarily for the argument about democracy, but the heart of the book on an emotional level are the middle chapters. When I talk about the lengths that slaves went to acquire education, even while they were enslaved, knowing that that could mean death or certainly violence. You know, it was outlawed in the South for African Americans to read and write. And I always knew that it had been outlawed, but I didn't know the lengths that folks went to learn to read and write. And then the other part that was really quite eye-opening was before the Civil War was over. So as they were called contraband at that moment because they were neither free nor slave. They were just sort of in between. And so, but as African-Americans made their way behind Union lines, one of the first things they wanted to do was read and learn to read. And so you see all these stories of colonels and generals saying, hey, all these folks want to do is read. Maybe we need to get some missionary teachers down there. And so you get these stories of the missionary teachers coming behind enemy lines to teach. And it's sort of like everywhere that sort of missionaries went and sort of the Union Army went, there was just this outpouring of desire to learn to read. Tons of stories that are just inspiring to read all by themselves. But the important thing I think for today is sort of twofold. I mean, one, to obviously cast aside this notion that black folks don't care about education. And, you know, there's some folks that sort of blame the victim, so to speak, in terms of education plight. I mean, you can't walk away from this book and think that African-Americans haven't devoted, you know, enormous efforts throughout their experience here into America in terms of acquiring public education. And then number two, to understand the why. And the why is what is key. You know, many of us live very comfortable lives today, you know, compared to the rest of the world and compared to prior history. And we talk about the importance of public education. We take it for granted, and sometimes it just seems like empty words. But when you read the firsthand accounts of newly freed slaves and then free African Americans and hear them talk about their struggle for education and what it meant, I mean, it wrenches your heart, and it really does, I say, tell us something about how education is a core component, not just of democracy, but of humanity itself. And so, you know, I think that's a great story worth reading. If you don't, you know, if you want to forget the first three chapters and forget the last five and just read about the freedmen, I mean, it'll warm your heart and it'll change the way you think about the world.
Well, there's one other thing here, and that is the idea of rethinking Reconstruction. And what Reconstruction meant and what it has meant even today. Talk to us about that, because you mentioned our previous conversation. I should let our audience know. Let me tell you a funny side story to this, Derek. You were on this program October 5th, 2016, talking about ending zero tolerance, and now here you are literally 4 years later to the day discussing a new book.
I didn't look at the calendar, but, man, you're on top of it.
Yeah, well, look, I have to thank the online side of the show with Blog Talk Radio. They had, of course, with the scheduling, when I have previous guests, if the name pops up, you know, in the previous thing. So, and I was like, oh, my goodness, October 5th, 2016. It's so funny that here you are now literally 4 years later. But I bring that up because talking about Reconstruction, you have a chapter in the book, and I want our audience to make a note of it, Chapter 7. Talk to us about that, because when people hear about Reconstruction, they think about something that's way past. Talk to us about the second Reconstruction.
Well, you know, I think that the Reconstruction following, you mean, I'm sorry, you say the second Reconstruction or the first Reconstruction?
The second one.
Yeah. So the second one, I sort of call that the modern civil rights movement, but a lot of historians call it the second Reconstruction. And the reason why they call it that is that following the Civil War, there is this idea of the rebirth of democracy, right? The things that we had promised in our original Constitution and other materials obviously had not come to life for African Americans, nor women, and the same true for a lot of poor whites. And so democracy is reborn in the United States of America following the Civil War. But of course, then we have Jim Crow segregation and the attempt by former slave owners to reduce African Americans back to second class citizenship, and so that rebirth is not completed, right? It gets cut short, right? Just as African Americans are coming into their own, their gains are cut short and go backwards in many respects, particularly at the ballot box. And what the modern civil rights movement of, you know, Brown v. Board and in the 50s, and then the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 65, we call that the second Reconstruction, because what the NAACP Legal Defense Fund was trying to do was finish the job that we started back in 1867, 1868. And so in the same way that Reconstruction following the Civil War was about education and voting, well, so too was the modern civil rights movement. And where did it start? I mean, that's another sort of key point. It didn't actually start with voting. It didn't start with housing. It didn't start with employment. It started with schools, right? And I sort of detail in the arguments and the briefs and the evidence put forward by the NAACP that they're making this argument to the Supreme Court and various others that, look, this is the gateway to citizenship, and we cannot have a real democracy of equal citizens if we are separating children at birth and putting them on different paths towards citizenship. We didn't finish the second, right? We didn't finish the second Reconstruction either. You know, I think the sad story will be is when I'm an old man and I'm telling the story of a third Reconstruction and a fourth Reconstruction or a fifth, you know, I mean, I think we are in a magic moment right now, and it could go either way. But, you know, I'm hoping that we can finish the job that we started in 1867 and 68.
I want to talk about that, because as we kind of look at what you were just saying and think back, I mean, I turned 45 this year, Derek, so we're talking something even a little bit before my lifetime, that this is something, though, that is still new. But you said something that I liked, because I was looking for the hope, and you do share that, and I should let our audience know, and we're going to remind them how they can get their own copy of Schoolhouse Burning. There is their optimism there. What helps you to stay optimistic? Is it because of what you mentioned, Derek, about what we kind of see rising up now? Or what is it that keeps you from thinking that all is not lost?
Well, you know, I was telling someone else, America started out with a good idea and has been struggling to reach it for over 200 years. Had some bad ideas, too, obviously, early on. But, you know, to use Lincoln's words, we have been striving to create this more perfect union. And what I have seen, and this is not to sort of, you know, turn a blind eye to any inequality, there's been tremendous inequality, you know, slavery, racism, sexism, you know, all of those things. But what you see through our school is an inching forward, right, towards a more perfect union, towards more equality. But then you also see these moments in time when things get too equal, right? And that's what happens following the Civil War and Reconstruction, is that, you know, a lot of whites didn't want African Americans to be equal, so they pull public education back. And we see the same thing in the backlash to the Civil Rights Movement. But my optimism comes from this, and it is, there was virulent racism in the late 1800s and during Jim Crow. There was plenty of racist backlash in the 60s and 70s and now today. But what we saw, at least following Reconstruction and during the 60s, was that public education survived, right? That it was this, as I said, it was this black idea really owed to African Americans in the South that once whites got a taste of it, they didn't want to throw it away either. They might have wanted segregation, but they wanted public education too. And because public education survived, and because those ideas about equality and an open society for all survived, that kept the groundwork that the Legal Defense Fund, NAACP, 75 years later could point back to and say, we still haven't reached that goal yet. And people listened, right? And it fueled their moment. And the same thing during the backlash to the Civil Rights Movement, you know, Virginia wanted to close all the public schools in the state so that we could keep them segregated in the private setting. But you know what? Suburban white women said, if our choice in Richmond, if our choice is between no public education and desegregated education, we unfortunately will take desegregated education. And so public education survives again. And it's still here for us today to reach back to those ideas of the Civil Rights Movement and Reconstruction and go, you know, we still haven't made good on that. Let's do it. So my optimism sort of flows from the idea that public education has persisted, our democracy has persisted, and it has ideas that are inspiring. But I worry, right, the past is no predictor of the future, and just because we survived in the past does not mean that we will continue to succeed in the future, and we are at a tipping point right now.
Yeah, which really shows why it's so important for us to not only to be educated on this topic, but also informed and take action. And the book definitely encourages that. Again, everyone, Derek W. Black has been our guest. Schoolhouse Burning, Public Education and the Assault on American Democracy is the title of the brand new book. It's out now through our friends at Amazon.com, or you guys can get it through your favorite bookstore. Derek, how can our audience stay connected with you?
Well, I'm on Twitter pretty much every day talking about whatever the most pressing issue in public education is. And so you can reach me at Derek W. Black. That's D-E-R-E-K-W Black. And also DerekWBlack.com is my website. And you can find out more about my research and other work I have out there.
All right. Well, Derek, it was great talking with you about ending zero tolerance. Exactly. It's again, that's so crazy. 4 years ago, and now to have you back again with the new book. Congratulations to you, and excited to be able to have you back again.
Yeah, thanks, and hopefully it won't be 4 years. Maybe I can write a book quicker next time.
All right. Hey, I'm going to hold you to that. We're now following each other on Twitter, so I will be looking for sure.
Okay, sounds good. All right.
And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Derek, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay. The link is available through our social media sites. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Let's make today amazing. Take care.